Hey, and welcome to the Deconstructor of Fun podcast. I'm your host, Mishka Katkov, and in this episode, I'm joined by Ben Porter, Director of Consulting at Newzoo. This podcast is going to be about the Newzoo's latest report. We're going to talk about four main topics. We're going to talk about the industry trends, including the shifting landscape of player engagement post-lockdown, competition from other media consumption sources, and the impact of technologies like AI. We're going to talk about console market growth as the second topic. So factors like peak install base or whether we have reached it, next gen content and potential new Nintendo device. And how is that going to affect the console market growth? As a third topic, we're going to talk about opportunities for breakout success with games like BattleBit and Helldivers 2 that cater to specific niches. And finally, we're going to talk about how the industry is reshaping, meaning how companies are adapting by focusing on profitability, utilizing new technologies, and exploring co-development. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Join the discussion about the episode on our Deconstructor of Fun Slack channel. You can access the channel by going to deconstructor.com, deconstructoroffun.com, and then there's a Slack group, so apply. And finally, if you like content like this, sign up to our newsletter. Give us a thumbs up or a few of those precious stars on whatever podcast platform you are listening to. And this type of stuff really helps and encourages us to do more content like this. And anyways, ladies and gentlemen, Ben Porter from Newzoo. This podcast is brought to you by AppsFlyer. In today's digital world, understanding your app's journey from discovery to download is more than just insightful. It's essential. Enter AppsFlyer, the leader in mobile attribution and marketing analytics that allows you to measure the full potential of your marketing efforts, making every ad dollar work smarter. With AppsFlyer, that's your new reality. Dive deep into data-driven insights that reveal exactly where your users come from and how they interact with your app. AppsFlyer, where your app's potential meets performance.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
You're Newzoo's Director of Consulting. Now, what is Newzoo and what do you do, Ben?
Yeah, great question. So Newzoo is a boutique market intelligence and data firm specializing in the games industry. Our sort of tagline is that we have data covering the games, gamers, and the games market. And in terms of who we work with, that's often game developers, game publishers, but it can also be, say, companies that are not directly involved in the creation of or distribution of video games, but also brands, let's say, or financial institutions that are investing in games, brands that want to learn how to activate gamers as an audience. And in terms of myself and what I do, like you said, I'm the head of the consulting in Newzoo. And in terms of the types of work that we do, we work with clients, again, primarily in the game development and publishing on things like their game greenlighting process, go-to-market strategies, business strategy. And the types of projects we take on look like total addressable market, sales forecasting, mergers and acquisition support, these types of projects. And
for a couple of episodes, Tom Wyman, he's currently on a paternity leave with a second child, and he friendly referred that the consulting arm is just reading the reports that they create, but apparently much more than read out loud the reports that the research team does.
Well, he's not entirely wrong, and we have to give credit where credit is due. So definitely a big shout out to Tom and the crew for putting together some pretty amazing reports for us to read out.
Yeah, and today we're going to talk about the latest report. Very insightful, very interesting, very, how would I say, scary at some points.
Yeah, fair.
And fair. So let me ask you like a high level question. Like, what is the pulse of the gaming market right now? Because on a high level, we see layoffs that's happening every week. We're about 8,000 in 2024, where the overall number was 10,000 in 2023. And that is probably not even accounting all the startups that are going to go or are already going under. We see at the same time, people are talking about recovery. There's always like these graphs like, hey,
we're back into the growth. It's a small growth, but we're up here. Then your report, the latest one, was talking about playtime declining. The market is consolidating on mobile, but as well as on PC and console for a long time. So can you give a high-level pulse of where we are right now with the gaming market?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're in a bit of a downturn or a trough in the market. And I don't think this is in many ways, when we've spoken to people about this or when we've shown this data to folks, people are intuitively saying, yeah, okay, this is what I think is happening, but I haven't really seen the data to support it. So I don't think it's necessarily surprising to anyone. I think it's just not necessarily being articulated in this way. And like you said, there's these sort of data points that we've been getting through the gaming media around layoffs, right-sizing of companies. You could call it maybe there was overinvestment earlier in the 2020s off the back of COVID, for example. And now we're kind of coming down a little bit, right-sizing the industry, settling into sort of a new norm. And there's also just there has been a fundamental shift in terms of how players are spending their time and the types of games that are successful and the types of games that are heavily entrenched as well, which the report gets into.
Mm. Yeah, this is interesting. The concept of a new norm. And that is heard not only in the gaming industry, but overall, like even listening to, let's say, fund managers when they're talking about inflation rates, or when they're talking about interest rates, they're talking about that this is a normal interest rate, what we have been accustomed to for the past, 14 or about 14 years almost, is a kind of like the zero interest rates environment, which is boosting the economy quite significantly, and companies are focusing much more on growth than on profitability. And now things are normal. It's not even high interest rates, it's just a normal interest rate. And you're saying the same thing, is like gaming industry has definitely benefited from this growth mindset that we've had in the market for over a decade. And now things are just normalizing. And the size of the industry is, in terms of workforce, in terms of the amount of projects going on, is just normalizing. Is that the correct assessment?
That's a very fair statement, absolutely.
And one thing that your reports don't show are actually three things. Inflation adjustment. So
yes,
inflation is still relatively high, higher than the 2% that we are in most Western countries targeting. It's not showing web shop revenues. So that's something that many publishers, especially on mobile, have been pushing forward and gaining a lot of traction. And it's not showing ad revenue, which is quite significant, especially on mobile. But it has been coming in on console. It has been coming on streaming services. So now that the companies are, again, moving out of growth at all means, they're going to profitability. And they're, you know, you can get your Netflixes with ads. You can get your Spotify now with ads. And I mean, Spotify was always with ads, but even they are pushing forward. So all these services are leaning more into ads as additional source of revenue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you see this a little bit. I think it was 6 months ago or so, Satya Nadella had his compensation package altered, whereas in the past it was Game Pass was a line there for increasing the number of subscribers. And I want to say 6 months ago, it was actually changed to revenue growth, which perfectly aligns with what you're saying, right? So if you're trying to grow a subscriber base, you're going to make very different decisions in terms of you know, how you position Game Pass. And if you're going for revenue, then again, you're going to see things like, let's say, exclusive titles start to come to other platforms, which is exactly what is happening in a small way to begin with. But you know, it wouldn't be weird for that to accelerate or for further changes to take place there.
You've heard of Heroic Labs by now, and we keep talking about them because in today's mature market, you need every edge to be successful. Rather than spending those precious company dollars on building game tech, focus on building your game and shipping it. Get into your players' hands faster and grow your community. Heroic Labs is battle-tested partner and friend of the podcast. Their tech enables you to be flexible, creative, and scale for success. Heroic Labs has your tech stack covered. Whether you're looking for a world-class back-end game server, an amazing game development framework, fantastic live ops tooling, or reliable mass scalability, Heroic Labs has solutions for all of these challenges. And it's not just us at Deconstructor of Fun praising Heroic Labs. The company works with some of the world's biggest publishers on many of the beloved games. Focus on your game, save a big chunk of cheese, and avoid tech risks with Heroic Labs. This podcast is brought to you by Data AI. Now, you're asking, didn't they get acquired by Sensor Tower? They did, and that's awesome. Here's why. Whether you loved using data.ai or Sensor Tower, the combined company will offer customers even stronger and more detailed insights on the full digital customer journey. Exciting times lie ahead as Sensor Tower and Data AI join forces. Go to data.ai or sensortower.com and get on board with undeniably the best data partner in the business. Now, back to the episode.
Yeah, got it. So, okay. So right sizing is the correct term. And in terms of the growth, like you're showing that there's a small growth, 1-2% overall in the market that is going to be happening for the next several years. If we adjust that to inflation, could we say that that's almost a decline or same size of the market?
I think that's a pretty fair statement. And we'll probably dive into that. Or, well, we might, I don't want to put words in Tom's mouth, but maybe I will. Maybe I will put words in Tom's mouth. I think we'll probably dive into that in our report that will come out later this year, the Games Market Report and Forecast, the sort of flagship one.
Yeah, I just wanted to point that one out because the common, like when the title says we are recovering, we're back on growth, it's it's misleading because if you adjust that to inflation, it's not on back on growth. And what that causes is that the people who don't read through it or don't understand the impacts of inflation, especially people working in game development, are saying, why are you laying off people if we are growing again? And when we adjust this, we are not growing. Many companies are actually declining.
Sure. No, I think that's a fair statement. And growth is not equal across all companies. That's another really key point. And one other nuance here in terms of how we report on revenues, you also have currency effects because we report in US dollars. And so there is some nuance here where, for example, the Japanese yen or in South Korea or with China, their respective currencies are somewhat down against the US dollar. So when we take the sort of revenue and the spending that's taking place in those markets, they may be, let's say, relatively healthy, but then you convert them to a currency that is unfavorable. And that also, further worsens the impact as well. So there is some nuance there, but I think your point overall does stand. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to kind of like get the pulse of, because oftentimes it feels that it comes overly positive. It's not overly negative either, but there's an inconsistent sentiment or inconsistent message when we're talking about getting back on growth and then we're talking about layoffs in the next sentence. It's like, how does this compute? This makes no sense. So it's really interesting to dive kind of deeper into the market and understand how these two things are happening simultaneously. So
That's fair.
So let's talk about PC console outlook, because Newzoo is really focused on PC and console. So the other half of the market, we mostly talk about mobile on this podcast, but we've been talking more about console and PC. So this is something that we've discussed with Tom for a couple of last episodes, and that is really the problem of the three simultaneous business models. So games as a service, so live games, premium games, and subscription catalogs, all kind of competing for the same thing, which is players' time. And then at the same time, as the report shows, the audience size is quite stagnant. It's not growing as fast as it needs to be to uphold all these different business models. And on top of that, the latest report is talking about declining playtime, which is even more scary for any kind of a service. So my question is kind of like looking at the graph is like, why is console the slowest growing by far? So it shows in your graphs it's less than 2% year over year growth, which is technically decline if we count in inflation. And then we have PC games growing at about 4%, which we could say is same size.
Yep. Fair. So, in the console market, last year we did have, I assume you're referring to the 2023 growth is what you're referring to specifically, or
Yes.
yep.
Yeah,
Yep.
2023.
Yeah, so last year we did have quite a release slate of AAA kind of blockbuster games on console and PC. And we actually anticipated the console was going to grow significantly more. If you were to go back in time a little bit, you'd see that we had a significantly higher growth rate pegged for
I
console.
remember it was like
Well,
7% or something.
yeah, you got it exactly. And so what ended up happening when we look back on this year, and again, when we make these, or I should say, when Tom is making these market sizing numbers, he's we're starting from company financials, so we're looking at like what's actually reported, and we augment that with our data, and we try and triangulate as well. But what we found was that actually, while these premium titles did do exceptionally well on console, it was cannibalistic with live service. So there wasn't sort of a overall growth of the pie within console. Counter to that, in 2023, we actually were a little bit more pessimistic on PC. But what ended up happening there is that live service did sustain better than we anticipated. And the premium titles that were cross-platform also did better than we anticipated on PC specifically. So we were probably overly ambitious on console earlier than what reality reflected.
Got it. So PC really doing better because of the live services that they have. And I mean, PC has some fun, like, how would I even call it, like monumental live services? Like, whether we're talking about
Yes.
Counter-Strikes or League of Legends or Dotas or Valorants,
Valorant.
they are, yeah, they're absolutely, amazing. But the same kind of exists on mobile, on console as well. Like the Maddens, the
For
FIFAs,
sure.
they seem to be doing really, really well every year, almost better every year. And you're saying basically, so the titles like the Baldur's Gates and the Diablo 4s and other ones, because they were cross-platform, so they kind of lifted the PC even more, or is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, correct. They lifted PC more, whereas the cannibalistic effects were greater on the console side. And I think like the console side of gaming is a little bit more attuned to the premium side of the market, whereas PC is a little bit more attuned to the live service side of the market. Like you said, there's several very significant pillars of live service games on PC that aren't even available on console at all, right? So that's a little bit of where that lopsided results came from.
Would it be also pot like, what do you think about this? When I'm looking at the PC market, I think it's more innovative in terms of the type of games that they are through Steam, of course. There's just much, I mean, the catalog is much more unique, much more interesting, and there are, most of these games are small, but they are, sudden hits, like the BattleBits of the world and the I don't know, Pal World is
Yeah,
probably not
Ready or
an
Not,
incredible
Pal
example,
World,
but
for sure.
BattleBit is probably a good example of that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's just due to the nature of it, of Steam not being gatekept in the same way that, and I don't use that word in a negative way, curated, sorry, that's the better word. Steam is less curated than, let's say, Xbox or PlayStation or Switch, and that allows for this innovation to thrive, and you have this huge long tail of indie games on PC that are a little less prevalent on the console side of things, and it allows for this innovation and it allows for these games to come out of literally nowhere and suddenly sell like 2, 3, 5, 6, 7 million copies or like Pal World over 20 and shake things up or sort of shift the paradigm a little bit. But often, as you said, they're not necessarily the largest titles. They can be large, they can grow to be large, but not exclusively. So I agree. PC is very innovative. That's a huge, huge source of strength for the PC platform.
Yeah, and launching overall on Steam is made much more easier than it is on consoles. Like, as you said, there's less curation, if you will, but there are also more tools. Like, you can be in private beta, you can have all these beta access where essentially you're live, but you're not quite live. Like, you set the expectations lower so you can get quicker in the market, get your first set of revenue to continue development, etc. These type of tools just don't exist on Xbox and PlayStation and Nintendo. They are much more, curated, if you, yeah, the probably the better word to say, closed, and they kind of like expect you to be on your best behavior when you enter their platforms. Unlike with Steam, it's just you can get voted out. So.
Absolutely. No, I 100% agree with that.
When we talk about like the major levers for growth on PC console, what would those be? Like, how can these two markets get back to growth or more significant growth? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's a more tricky question. And I think if you look at 2024's release slate, like it is a little bit lighter in terms of AAA. Like I don't think Sony has a tentpole franchise like a God of War or Spider-Man or something that's coming out in the coming year. So that the actual content is a big component of that. Shifts in technology can, of course, help with this as well, but we're in a bit of a weird console generation because we had COVID, which sort of had all eyes on video games, but then during that time you had these supply chain challenges, so people couldn't actually get their hands on next gen consoles. So it is a bit of a tricky generation, but of course when you do have generational changes, that can be an initiative for growth. The Switch was obviously a massive push for growth, and then business model adaptations, right? Like free to play. We talk about that often in the context of mobile, but free to play was massive for the PC and console side of the business as well. If you didn't have free to play, like there's no way that the PC console audience would be as large as it is today. So I think the innovating in these sort of realms are going to be the areas that will continue to drive growth. I don't have a magic formula for what that looks like. And then when we skip ahead to talking a little bit about some of the success stories, which you were touching on already with Palworld and Baldur's Gate and whatnot, I think catering to specific audiences also really helps, right? A lot of those games that we saw that were success stories, they came out and they filled kind of very specific gaps in the market. That is a way to sort of continue growing as well, albeit it doesn't necessarily move the needle as massively as introducing a new Fortnite or something to the game. On that note, actually, UGC, I think this is a big next step. Well, it's already here, but that is a growth pillar that I'm interested to see how that continues to unfold over time between Roblox, UEFN on Fortnite, and the other sort of sandbox platforms as well.
Yeah, that's okay. That's interesting. I took a couple of things here, and I have also a couple of questions for you. So, there's a questions of accessibility. Like accessibility on PC is quite low. Like people can build their own PCs. The PCs are not that expensive, and they're quite budget friendly. If you want to upgrade, you can upgrade your GPUs. You can upgrade anything, any pieces. Just pull in and put a new one, and that machine can keep on going. Consoles, on the other hand, are becoming increasingly more expensive, and then they are also these sort of a content fortresses. Like there's games you can play only PlayStation, there's games you can play only on Xbox, and sometimes there's a game you can play on PlayStation and PC, but you can't play that game on console. Which, oh, sorry, on
On
Xbox.
Steam
So
or
it's kind of
something,
like
yeah. Oh, yeah.
the yeah. So especially like the PC PlayStation Xbox competition. So one thing that I'm seeing is like the accessibility of these. The devices are very expensive, and they're not, you can't upgrade them. You always have to get the next one that comes in like 5 to 7 years afterwards, and all the titles to it. It's just an expensive device to have and to keep updating. The second part that I feel is restricting the growth. I don't know what you think about this. Is the quality requirement? It's like Ubisoft is jokingly saying that they're making like five. No, it wasn't Ubisoft. It was CD Projekt. So Ubisoft said that the Skull and Bones was quadruple A, and then CD
Quadruple
Projekt
A,
Red
yeah.
said that like it's a 5XA project that they're doing next. So it's kind of like jokingly saying, but it's true. Like the cost of making a game just keeps on increasing, and cost of shipping a game continues on. So publishing or doing the marketing for is increasing. So that's sort of a quality requirement on not only how much it has to cost to make a game and market it, but also this same type of a quality how do they call it, like a threshold or requirement seems to be going to these publishers when they're making a live service game. They feel like it has to be exactly the same quality as their premium titles, but now they're going to do live service. So the size of a team and the investment to do content treadmill on a game that costs like $200 million to make is just sounds astonishing. So what do you think about the sort of a, like my notion of accessibility and quality requirements sort of in a way restricting the growth?
I think it's 100% bang on. I mean, there's huge frictions to becoming a console player or a PC player, just getting into it. And like you said, if you have a PC, you can kind of continue to upgrade it over time. But the initial investment of getting a PC in the first place is really quite high. And when we look at emerging markets, this isn't reflected in our part of this is reflected in our PC console growth. But we see there is a lot of growth in these emerging markets. I think Latin America, Middle East, North Africa, Southeast Asia, so on and so forth, are continuing to grow at a higher pace. But the growth that you see there is coming from a smaller base, and it's really being outstripped by mobile. Like, the mobile growth in those markets is significantly higher. And again, because you get this one device that sort of does everything in your life, it's much easier to make that investment than it is to make an investment in like a dedicated device for playing games. So I think accessibility plays sort of a huge role there. And maybe that's where some of this cross-platform, there's a lot of buzz around releasing on PC, console, and mobile. Not necessarily the same SKU, but just having some element across all three platforms. And on the same, on the other side of what you were saying, 100%, the cost for making games is continuing to go to the moon. But on top of that, it's also the time to make a game. For some of these games, we're looking at 6 years plus to deliver them. And that's becoming like fairly normal for the development cycle for some of these really big AAA, console exclusives and whatnot. That, you know, you're only going to put one of those out every few years, and you can only have a couple of those in the pipeline sort of marinating at any given point. And then you're taking bigger and bigger bets every time as well, which means that you really also need it to succeed. And that causes other issues like sequelization and whatnot.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing with the sort of I don't know if quality is a wrong word, production values, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So with the production values, because it feels like the production values are being pushed up by the team itself, so they want to do better than they did last time, and they want to impress critics with the production values. But when we look at the games that are, that breakthrough in this incredibly competitive market, like, we're not talking about the Call of Duties or the new Mattens, we're talking about Pal Worlds, the BattleBits, the Helldivers, sure, the Baldur's Gate 3s. Yep. These are not games that are known for exceptional production values. Like, they have good enough production values.
Absolutely.
And that is sort of a interesting thing. Is like, it's almost not user focused or player focused when these production values are discussed. It's just internal mentality or craftsmanship to push it to such a high level where it's almost unsustainable for most of the titles in development.
Yeah, and I think one element of that is there's at least a perception that audiences are trained and sort of adapted to want this new iteration in production values. So the God of War audience wants the next God of War to be even just like that much better than the previous God of War. Like, that's at least the going assumption, as far as I would, as an observer would say. Now, whether or not that's true, I think that's a good question. For something like Helldivers, clearly it's coming out of left field, and people may not have had those expectations of that title. So when they get in, it's just really fun. Flipping over, though, the other thing that sort of bucks the trend, the sort of antithesis to all of this is Nintendo, where you look at the Switch, which is, that hardware was not even necessarily the most cutting-edge graphics processors and whatnot when it launched, and now we're 7 years on into the cycle, and you look at the games that are being put out for that, they're really good games. Look at the most recent Tears of the Kingdom, that's a beautiful game. But it's, I would say, way more stylized than it is, let's say, graphically intensive. if that makes sense. And
Yeah.
you look at Pokemon and other things like that. So it does sort of manage to buck the trend. These are still beautiful games, they're still amazing, but they're not really requiring the latest and greatest graphics. They do still take time and they do still take a lot of money. So don't get me wrong, actually that part still holds, but it is just interesting, taking that same Helldivers analogy across to Nintendo and looking what that whole company's sort of strategy is. It's almost, in some ways, almost in opposition to what you see in other parts of the market.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's very, very interesting to follow this. But something you were talking about is the mobile titles, or something you referred to. So let me, I kind of forgot. So let me jump into this sort of a mobile expansion of PC and console publishers. So if I understand this correctly, this is being pushed by the fact that, as we discussed, the console and PC market is very concentrated. It's very difficult to break through. We'll talk about that in a moment. And the second half fact is that mobile games generate half of all the gaming revenues. And if you're doing really well on console, you're still getting about like 25% of all the revenues. If you're doing really well on PC and console, you might be doing the 50, but you're not looking at the other 50%. So kind of like if you're a
Sure.
business person, it's the easiest way to double your revenues is also to succeed on the market that you don't exist, rather than fighting the incumbents on the highly competitive markets that you are. And then the final fact is that every single person who plays these PC console games has a mobile device that they can play any of these games, and they're likely playing some of these games. So it's not like you have to get them to buy a certain type of device. They already have it. It's in their pocket, and they're actually using it more than they're using the other devices to play other games. So can you talk a little bit more about when for example, you're working with your clients, is how are they looking at mobile after they've, found their foothold on PC and console?
Great question. What you said is exactly right. And there is a slide on this in the report as well, where we talk about the overlap of PC, console, and mobile players. And I think we say something like 32% of players are playing on two platforms at the same time. And then there's 15% of players that are playing across all three platforms. And what we do know is that when you are playing on, and this is very logical, right? I'm not going to say anything that's sort of groundbreaking, but the data sort of backs this up. But when you're playing on multiple platforms, and you're able to engage more, right? Engagement just goes up. I think in the report we say average playtime goes from 4 hours a week if you have a single platform up to almost 12 hours a week. So it's tripling if you have if you're playing on three platforms. So that's mobile, PC, console. But likewise, if you're able to engage significantly more, then your spending is also going up. And I think everybody sort of looked at successes like a Genshin Impact, for example, and their cross-platform release, and they're kind of trying to ask, like, how do we get a piece of that? How do we sort of access that? Now, in the same breath, I think it's also really challenging to be able to do that because there's a lot of questions that you need to be able to answer. The mobile market does not look the same. It does not operate the same as PC console, so your demographics and your audience are going to shift. You need to consider that. Your whole monetization model needs to be in line. You need to consider, are you going to have one SKU of the game that allows mobile players and PC console players to engage at the same time, or are you going to make different SKUs and perhaps have cross progression instead of actual cross play? So there's a lot of things to sort, a lot of sort of nuance to take into consideration there. But you're absolutely right that it's, I think it's easy to shrug it off and not consider the mobile market. It's also very easy to make sort of misconceptions and sort of dive into the mobile market without taking all of the right things in consideration. But I think it's quite hard, and not that many games have really pulled it off expertly yet. So there's few that we can kind of learn from at this point.
Yeah, it's also a little bit crazy because when you look at the mobile market turned very difficult after the privacy changes. It has been declining, so there's even more problems on mobile compared to console and PC. So we're seeing mobile publishers looking at PC as a potential growth market. We're seeing console publishers looking at PC as a growth market. We see mobile publishers coming on PC using the tactics that were successful on mobile and probably are not going to be successful on a different device with a different user base with a different expectations. And we're seeing console PC publishers coming to mobile and using the same tactics, same monetization models that they use on PC or console, and finding that very difficult to, you know, to make it work in the same way. Like we saw Warframe coming in on mobile, absolute tank, like just a little tank of a game, and tanked as a game on mobile, despite doing for a decade really well on PC. We're seeing now the Call of Duty Warzone coming in from Activision on all platforms, and definitely doing, at least in the first month, significantly worse than their mobile specific version. So it seems like that is the most challenging part, unless you have games like Teamfight Tactics or the Hearthstones that don't sort of require a specific control scheme where you can play on a level play field no matter what size of your screen is. That's going to be interesting to see. But when you're talking to your clients, like, how is cross-platform for them more interesting than sort of these brand extensions where they put a version of their game on mobile?
You mean by cross-platform, you mean true cross-platform play?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's hard to say that they're fixed on one way or the other. I think it's more of a question. What do we do? Like, and then there's, you know, oftentimes what we're doing is we're looking into what are other people doing? Like, how are other people succeeding in this space, and where are the failures, right? And so a lot of it can be kind of digging into what other teams have done. And I think the tough part about this is finding what is the right way to approach it for your IP, for your game. And that's always going to be on a sort of title by title, IP by IP, company by company basis. So it's just very difficult to make any sort of sweeping assessment about that, because what works for Genshin Impact or what works for, like you said, the Call of Duty is not necessarily working for Warzone, for example. So yeah, but I wouldn't say they're necessarily fixated on one specific way. And I guess what we've seen is when we look at least the mobile side coming over, there's a few different sort of ways that people are looking at this. One is, okay, we have a game on mobile, we're going to just huck it on PC because then it's available for people. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, again, you're meeting players where they are, so you're upping that engagement. You can look at doing sort of true crossplay. So that's usually building a new game from the feed up, maybe with an existing IP, to try and follow the sort of Genshin Impact model. You can look at cross progression. So you've got a game that operates on PC console, a separate version of that game operating on mobile, but you're able to kind of cross progress between the two games. But then the final version that we saw, and this is kind of an interesting one and maybe unique, is with ShiftUp specifically. They are from the Nikkei Goddess of War team, if you're familiar with that mobile title. They're actually coming to PlayStation 5 with an exclusive Stellar Blade. I'm not sure if you've seen any buzz about that one, which is quite interesting. So they're actually, as far as I can tell, they're not even carrying their IP over. They're just making a net new game that's sort of a PS5 exclusive. And I see that as more of a... Sorry,
same art style. With the same art style.
There's let's say, similar aesthetics. and I think, really, that's a desire, like you said, to tap into a different market, but it's also a desire to get out of the yoke of, like, let's say a single master, right? So if you're only operating on mobile, you're largely, your success is largely influenced by, let's say, Apple and the Android stores. There are these sort of new marketplaces that are popping up, but I think they just want an opportunity to sort of get diversify their revenue streams away from just those two places.
Mm, interesting. Yeah, understandable. And that is, as I said, like it's the easiest type of a growth, at least on paper, when you just enter a new market. And on paper. But then when the when the rubber hits the road, it's always a little bit different. It's like the expectations and everything you learned is just going to be different. I have friends who've moved from mobile, being at mobile for a decade, and then moved to a AAA studio to work on whatever, whether they are working on the product side or whether they are working on production side or design side. The everything is different, from the pace of work to expectations to the vocabulary to you name it. And despite these people playing the same games and being in the game industry for so long, it's just a different market. So it's very interesting to see how they are able to bring their expertise and adjust to same audience with different expectations, if you will.
100%.
Step into the future of game monetization with Exola. Exola empowers developers and publishers to market, sell, connect, and optimize their games globally. From payment solution to a full suite of tools designed to grow your game's revenue while fostering a loyal player base, Exola is your game's gateway to worldwide success. With Exola, the world is your playground. Visit exola.com today and find all the solutions that will help you to power your games into success everywhere.
The PC console market, like one of the elements in the report was market concentration on PC and console. And this is something that I think the mobile publishers don't or overlook or kind of think that they have some kind of a competitive advantage where they can come in and not be influenced by these market realities. So again, a lot of mobile publishers are seeing PC as a potential growth market.
Yeah.
And four facts from the reports are 90% of the new game revenues in 2023 was captured by just 43 titles, so quite of a concentration. 90%, that's insane. titles 6 year old and over accounted for more than 60% of playtime from 2022 to 2023. So people are playing old games, and even that kind of people playing old games 6 years and older, and the whole focus on the production values have to be higher, that's the way we can win, is already countered by this fact. Over 60% of playtime spent on new titles went to franchises with annual releases. So the Maddens, the FIFAs, the Call of Duties, the you name it. And then finally, new titles. This is the scariest. New titles competed for 8% of the total playtime in 2023.
Yeah.
8%. So it's like a fraction of everything is left to the new title. So can you talk a little bit about like what is the success behind the top titles on PC? And especially PC, but PC console.
Yeah, good one. So I guess if we, well, you've got to break it down into those segments again. So looking at, let's say, titles that are 6 years and older, the top five, we named these in the report, were Fortnite, Roblox, League of Legends, Minecraft, and Grand Theft Auto V. And I think one of the elements here is that there's an element of course, like a first mover advantage, right? So coming in and being a live service game quite early on in live service games, like as they were sort of the inception of the beginning of live service games within PC console, that already helps, right? So you sort of have incumbents, but these games have done a really good job of sort of executing on that live service model over time, and they were able to do that also at a time, if you go back in time 6 years ago, the market was, I think, a little bit more forgiving of a new live service game coming out and finding its feet in terms of its content cadence, the type of contents it releases, the monetization models, things like that. Like those have actually changed, and now they're sort of becoming more cemented over time. I think our expectations have sort of changed in terms of what a new live service game should have, but really all of these titles are in some way, shape, or form a platform, and they're titles where folks have deep networks and deep investment over time. And I think it's really hard, like the switching costs to get someone out of a game like Grand Theft Auto or Roblox, where they've got a whole network of friends, they put a bunch of time into and maybe money into creating their and crafting their experience. That's really, really hard to get away from. And then in the case of Fortnite and Roblox specifically, you have that user-generated content side of things that I think is a bit of an X factor, and we're going to continue to see how that evolves over time. So that's sort of the six-year-plus titles, a bit of my thoughts on that. For new titles, you mentioned already the annual recurring titles, 60% of new title playtime. And when we look at that, a lot of these are deeply entrenched experiences as well. So what I mean by that is NBA 2K, Madden, EAFC, if you want these experiences, that's the place you're going to go, right? There's not very many other places that you're going to go to get an NBA experience. So as they release year in, year out, these hours are entrenched. Those audiences are going to migrate over to the newest version of that. And unless you are launching NBA 3K or something, it's pretty hard to consider that audience as addressable audience for your new game. Or sorry, the audience could be, because they could overlap in terms of other games they play. But those hours, let's say, those hours are heavily entrenched in that type of experience. And there's lots of players out there who, you know, in any given console generation, every year they buy the latest Call of Duty, and then they buy the next NBA 2K game, and then that's kind of it. In terms of the 8%, which yeah. the daunting 8%, the top five titles that we listed here, Diablo, Hogwarts, Baldur's Gate, Elden Ring, and Starfield, interesting, all five of these titles have one thing in common, and they're all pay to play. Only Diablo can really be considered a live service game. The other four are premium titles. The other thing that I would say about these games, which is also unique, is all of them are coming from studios that have some kind of a legacy behind them. Starfield's coming from Bethesda. People know what to expect from a Bethesda game. Elden Ring, From Software. These guys have been making games since, I think I was playing Armored Core on the PlayStation 1 back in the day. Baldur's Gate even, that's Larian. This is the culmination of probably 20 odd years of developing this specific type of game, with Divinity Original Sin 2 coming just before it. Hogwarts Legacy, even that one came from Avalanche. That studio, if you're not familiar with it, was previously owned by Disney. They did Disney Infinity, which was the Toys to Life game for Disney. And as far as I recall, that was about a $1 billion franchise or pillar of the business. I think that also included the actual toys themselves, but still very significant. We're used to working with IP studio that's had hits in the past. And then, of course, Diablo, Blizzard, very legacy, very great legacy of that studio as well. So all of these studios are not really coming out of nowhere, right? So they are, you're competing for this 8%, but you're also competing for this 8% with these sort of juggernauts that have existed in the industry for a very, very long time and have been delivering high quality games for that entire duration.
So it takes a decade for an overnight success. Is that what you're saying?
you nailed it, exactly.
Just to summarizing what you said is like, with the titles that already have like live titles, it feels like they have locked the players with the progress that players have been experiencing for such a long time. So if you accumulate so much progress that starting something from the beginning would be insane. Like, why would you want to play a similar game when you've spent 6 or 7 years in the previous one and had gotten that? And then there's the social graph that you most likely have developed by playing one of these games for years. So now you have to essentially migrate your whole social graph, which is impossible. And then finally, it's the content. Like, if you are launching today, and no matter how big of a team you have, you're competing against years and years of content from gigantic size of the titles. Yes. There's no way. There's absolutely no way. And if you say, hey, but we have better production values, it's like, get out. It's like, now you're even less accessible, because I need a higher level of a device to play, and there's probably longer loading times. Yes. It's more expensive for you to create content. It's not about the production values. That's what I'm kind of like, again, referring back to. But yeah, go ahead. You were talking about the breaking into the market. You're talking about the remakes, remasters, and so forth.
Oh, well, I think I was just going to mention, to your point about what you're competing with, we have this one slide in there that refers to Fortnite and what's happening within that ecosystem. And you saw that when, from October to November, if I'm getting my dates right, mm-hmm. Fortnite launched OG in November. And they had, by our account at least, a 60% MAU growth month over month.
Insane. insane.
which is coming from a very high base, let's put it that way. So that's 60% growth of a lot. And then in December, they maintained the 60% growth, and then they grew an additional 16% on top of that when they released Lego Fortnite, Fortnite Festival, and Rocket Racing. And then we did do some additional analysis, and it looks like that has been sort of coming down over time. But even when we looked last, I think for the, it was either the March or the February numbers, it was still 15-20% or so above the October numbers. And again, so like you were saying, if you're launching a new game, it really, to some extent, it doesn't matter like what you think you're competing against or what you think your unique offering is, because you are also competing with that, right? And some of these events kind of hoover everything up from the, all of the attention from the industry, all of the hours kind of get hoovered up into these types of events when they happen. And now that was maybe a one-off, but I think if you were to ask Epic and you were to ask the Fortnite guys, they'd tell you like, we want to do that every quarter for sure, right? That's part of the Disney play that they have going on as well. So I think that does make it particularly challenging to break in. It's not to say that it's impossible, but it is hard.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see that again, kind of like referring to the PAL worlds and the battle bits of the world. It's like they've taken the almost the area that has been left behind by the incumbents.
Yeah.
So the high level of accessibility, simple graphics versus high level graphics that allows them again to do many more things than the incumbent titles. It's just it's like almost like a taking a time machine and then figuring out what they are not doing of today. Like for example, if I play Call of Duty today on console, even on the newest mobile version, it's so difficult. Like it's so incredibly difficult because the players have been playing it for a long time, and yeah. And then again, when they make something so much more accessible and it looks like simple and cheap, if you will, and retro, it kind of like brings a different audience and allows you to enjoy those type of games without getting highly competitive as it is with the existing top titles. So. Anyways, there were some of the stuff that we were talking about. Oh, something about the market concentration is that why we're seeing so many remakes and remasters? Is that an easy way for the companies to come in, or is it like why these remakes and remasters? Why are we playing StarCraft 2 and Resident Evil 2 or whatnot, like, and Final Fantasy 15? Like, why is this happening?
Yeah, well, I think Final Fantasy is maybe its own thing because it does have some sort of in-universe elements that are shared across the Final Fantasies. They sort of attempt to reinvent themselves every time they have a new iteration. But to your point, you know, we have Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 3, Resident Evil 4. Like, these are getting sort of re-released. You have Dead Space as well. The Last of Us, Part 1 and Part 2 were both remade. And I think a lot of that comes down to safe bets. But it's two things I would say. One, the cynic in me would say that it's safe bets, right? You have a pre-existing IP. You have a fan base out there somewhere. They might be a little bit older, like myself, a little more gray in their beard than when Resident Evil 2 initially released. But there's people who are fans of that franchise and that IP that are out there. But the second half, and maybe this is the kinder side of me, would also say that you want to make these games available for newer audiences. And especially if you're talking about, let's say, Resident Evil, that you know, there is continuity in these games. And if Resident Evil 2 is, maybe it's not available, or maybe like to play on modern platforms, or maybe it is available, but you're still playing, you know, the PlayStation 1 version of that game, and you want to be able to experience it with modern production values. I think giving players the opportunity to either revisit that title or just get into that title for the first time is actually hugely beneficial. I'm kind of in favor of those types of remakes, at least. Just bringing things out of the past and bringing them forward. And it kind of aligns with what you were saying about BattleBit, almost this going back to basics side of things, right? Where You're making a, maybe a more sort of a streamlined version of a game, but it's still really, really fun, and people still want to play it, right? And going back to some of these older titles from let's say earlier generations and making them available in a modern format can be great.
Are these remakes and remasters finding the success? Like I've played, I think I've only played the StarCraft remaster, and
Sure.
I did not enjoy it at all. Like the usability was like, yes, the graphics improved, but the usability was just so bad compared to what you're expecting right now. And so I kind of feel like again, I can't speak of the other ones, but just improving the production values doesn't fix the issues with this being an outdated product. Are the other games like fixing this? And if they're not, like are they kind of going to the same well until it's empty? Because people just will be like, hey, I'm not gonna play this game if the graphics are just better because it's just not usable. It's not as good. The user experience is horrific compared to the modern ones.
I think you hit the nail on the head, and it runs the whole gamut. So, unfortunately, Warcraft 3 is another example of this where I think people were very upset with what happened with that title specifically. It was initially released. I think they got rid of a lot of support for various mods and things like that. I think they even discontinued the original version of the game, so you couldn't even kind of go back and purchase that. But it did have better graphics, right? So I think people were not particularly happy with how that one went. In the case of, let's say, what Capcom's been up to, and what I think you're seeing more of now is that just slapping new graphics on something is not enough. People do expect a little bit of there needs to be modernization in the design principles as well, because the PlayStation game, like the old-fashioned sort of tank controls and things like that, we've come a long way from there to now sort of over-the-shoulder third-person camera view, which just makes everything significantly easier. So there is an expectation of that. I think a great example of this, actually going back to Final Fantasy. I loved Final Fantasy VII when I was much, much younger, and the remakes that came out a few years ago, and they've just released a new version, or the second part of that recently, completely reimagined the whole combat system to make it significantly more dynamic, more fast-paced, more action-oriented. But they also kept an option where you can sort of toggle it back to the original version. So you get to kind of choose your experience, which I thought was a really interesting way to approach that. So for those folks who maybe don't have the nostalgia, don't want to visit like an old school turn-based RPG experience, there's this wholly new redesigned combat system for you to have fun with and explore. And for those people who do want that old school version of the game, that's also there for you. So they're really kind of trying their best to cater to fans and meet them wherever they are in terms of expectations. So I think some of these games are in fact finding a great deal of success. But there's a time, there's like you said, going back to the well, there's sort of a limit to that, right? You can only remake Resident Evil 2, maybe once every 20 years or something. I don't know. So at a certain point, you do need to continue on with innovation in other ways.
And final one about the market concentration. Some of the things we're seeing as everything is going to these existing incumbent titles and franchises, transmedia. So what's the does it really have the power to re-engage fans and to boost engagement across entire catalog, or is it more like a lightning in a I don't know how to say it, like a flash in a pan?
I get what you're saying. I would say the jury is still out. And I would also say that it is highly dependent on execution in a lot of ways. So looking at the study that we saw or that we put out, the release date, like the actual release of a transmedia IP, had on average a 35% uptick in engagement. But that's the average. So you did have significantly higher engagement from some IP, and you did have actually negative engagement from others. Now, it's also worth mentioning that this is a very difficult thing to measure because this doesn't happen in a vacuum. For example, if you release whatever your transmedia IP is, I don't know, your Castlevania season drops on Netflix on the same day that Elden Ring released. Well, that sucks, because Elden Ring is probably going to swallow a lot of the engagement that you might have expected in your underlying game IP. So I think that part makes it hard to really know. And I think the other piece that we are still waiting on is, when you look at a lot of these games that we've measured for, let's say The Last of Us, we've put out some numbers in terms of MAU growth, the 35%, so on and so forth. But these games don't necessarily measure themselves by MAU, right? Like, this is a premium title, so you're looking at lifetime sales. That's more important. And we do have some numbers on that. We can do some deep diving into that. Either way, I think the main thing that we are waiting for and that we haven't really seen yet is what happens next. Okay, so we released The Last of Us on HBO. We're going to release The Last of Us Season 2 on HBO again sometime soon. But I want to know what happens with The Last of Us Part 3, the game sales. That's the piece that will be sort of more telling. I want to know what happens with The Witcher 4. And unfortunately, those titles are not really out yet. And so, in that regard, it is quite challenging to know, did this expand the IP? Like, are you going to have way more sales of the next iteration of one of these franchises? Or is it going to be sort of a continuation of what you already had? And then the HBO series is, maybe it's expanding IP in terms of mind share, and maybe it's expand, but other than that, it has to be successful in its own right, to justify its own existence. And that's the piece that I think is still remains to be seen. I would say jury's out on that part.
Yeah, so pretty expensive investment without clear benefit, if you will.
I would say if you're going to take one of these undertake one of these endeavors, I would it has to justify itself to some extent, right? Like, it has to also be able to break even or be a revenue driver as well. Otherwise, like you said, it's a massive risk, in terms of the financial risk. But there's also a risk that if you kind of bomb your transmedia IP, like, that actually could have a negative impact on your underlying game IP as well, right? People will draw that association. So
Yeah.
ideally, you want to have if you're going to execute on one of these things, you need to execute well in order to elevate the overall perception of the IP. Like, I think regardless of what you say about whether or not HBO's The Last of Us is going to tie into game sales in a meaningful way in the future, I would suggest that the overall perception of that IP is elevated by the HBO series, at the very least, right? So
Yes.
it hasn't sort of tanked it, I would say.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, having a great movie or a great TV show is net positive. But what you're saying is that it's a considerable investment, takes a significant amount of time. You need to have specific resources for that. Of course, Sony has. I mean, Sony Pictures.
Absolutely.
Let's start there. But if you're anything smaller than that, then you might need to acquire new resources, new capabilities. Angry Birds, I remember, benefited significantly from the first movie, but then the second movie tanked, and there were financial repercussions of that investment, of course. So there are these elements at play, and the benefit of that is not as clear. It's hard to calculate into your future predictions. So you have to essentially put it as an investment into an IP and make it at least break even already in that investment, so that the sales of whatever transmedia will be covering the production cost, and then potentially it's going to be so good that it's going to elevate the rest of the portfolio. All right.
Absolutely.
One of the interesting part about the we briefly talked about the report is the decreasing playtime. So average quarterly playtime has decreased by 26% since 2021, but that was lockdown time. Is this across all titles, or is it with top titles, or is it with the bottom, not bottom, but anything else but the top titles? Like, where is the decrease more significant and where is it less?
That's a really good question. And I'll be honest, we didn't go that much deeper for like the year-over-year analysis of where the actual like net numbers are coming from. What I can say though is we did some, and this is not in the report, we did some early analysis on revenue per hour. as a metric to just sort of understand how this has changed over time. And it does look like revenue per hour has gone up. Which
naturally.
Does indicate, naturally, yeah, it indicates that a lot of these hours that have sort of left the industry were not associated with high spend. So, you know, were they free to play hours? I think that could be fair to say, but I do think it was largely kind of a cut across the top. I would say probably the, you know, free to play would have been a big part that's hit from that. Mm-hmm. And we do have some analysis as well, not in the report. And a shout out to my colleague Michael for shooting this over to me very recently. That showed about as a relative share, free to play in 2021 was around, I think, 42% of overall playtime, 45% in 2022, and then back down to 42% in 2023. Which again, so that's the relative share of total playtime. So if it stayed kind of more or less static across those 3 years, but overall playtime has shrunk, then I think it's fair to assume that to some extent, free to play, but also the rest of games were kind of all shrunk fairly consistently.
Got it. And on mobile side, when we're discussing the lack of growth of let's say consumers' time playing games, we kind of see two things really affecting that. Number one is rekindling with the outdoor activities post lockdown. So that means spending more time on travel, fitness, restaurants, everything that you weren't able to do. And again, we're comparing this to 2021. And then the second part that is even more significant of a trend is the competition for media consumption. Yes. So that has really intensified with people spending so much more time on social media platforms, streaming services, etc., that it takes away from games because they are on different device. They're on the same device. But do you see this type of effect potentially happening on PC and console, like our users, because essentially that's a different device. I can choose whether I'm streaming something on my phone or whether I'm playing, but on a PC I can do both.
Yeah, that's true, but it can be tough to do both at the same time. Although I do know a lot of people who will have either a podcast or something kind of up on one screen while they're playing on another.
Yes, exactly.
But I would say. I do think it's fair to say that those are most likely where these hours are going. Like you said, when lockdown was sort of repealed, people went outside and touched grass again. So that was a very immediate effect. But beyond that, we are just at, in a sense, peak content, right? There's more games than ever. And it's very easy to kind of get lost when looking just in the game's microcosm, but there's more content than ever in general, right? And a lot of really, really high quality content, right? Like TV or like the shows that are being put out, the series.
Shows.
Amazing, right? It's incredible. The YouTube content, I mean, I go in there off and on again, and sometimes I'm just blown away by what these people are putting together and putting out there on YouTube. And then, you know, not even talking about something like TikTok, Instagram, all these other things that are also claiming time. And I think that's also just to drive the point home. That is why we wanted to look at this from an hours perspective, because typically we are talking in an MAU perspective, but an MAU is not a mutually exclusive unit in the sense that I can appear as an MAU in multiple different games in any given month. But at least the hour that I have spent in one game, I'm probably not playing two games at the same time. I know very few people who could play two games at the same time. Yeah. So that hour is sort of mutually exclusive. And then when you think about it in those terms, the content that you're just describing, it's still all competing for the same hours. And there's a limitation to how much you can sort of overlap your movie watching with your game watching at the same time, right?
Yeah, definitely. That could be it. Like on a mobile, of course, the TikToks and the Instagrams and the Snaps and the YouTubes might be the ones that are in direct competition with mobile games. But on PC or console especially, I would say that since you're using the same device that you usually stream from, it's so much easier to be like, you know what, I'm just going to continue with Shogun because that's a show that I need to watch, or Yellowstone or whatever is going on.
Sure.
Like these are amazing. At least these are the shows that I'm watching. But, you know, looking at it's versus, you know, am I gonna dive into this game? It's like really difficult. How many hours do I have left? Like some games are hard to quit, but some games are just so intense and take so much time. Then you're like, you know what? I'm just gonna chill for 30 to 60 minutes and not engage. Like in 60 minutes, I won't get that far in this game, or I won't earn that much. So it feels like that.
Two points there. One is to your point, you've also got to even make the decision to walk over to your computer and be on that device in the first place. So it's not even necessarily about whatever is competing for you on your computer screen. You have to opt to go there and sit down. And then in the second point, I think one of the great advantages of video games that we always tout is that it is an interactive and engaging form of entertainment, uniquely so. And that is a massive advantage, and it's a wonderful thing, but it can also be a bit of a double-edged sword. Like as a father myself, like sometimes I come home from work, I fed my child, I did my whole thing, and I sit down and I'm like, no, I don't want to engage. I don't want to interact. I want to turn off. And I want to just be like fed content for an hour before I, cry myself to sleep and do it again tomorrow. So that's also, an element of this.
And like we're talking negatively about games, but I do have to say that I get hooked, as anybody in this
Yes.
business. I get hooked so badly on any of these games, especially for me, it's the strategy games, and
Nice.
they take so much more time. And I'm also kind of like
Yep.
scary to start something. I'll be
Yeah.
honest, I'm scary to engage. And if I play something, I might play a puzzle game actually, because I'm like, I'm not gonna go crazy on on the
Yeah.
latest puzzle. I'm just gonna enjoy myself a little bit and just chill, or even play an iPad game. But it feels like if I open up a total, I love Total War games. If I open
Nice.
up that or Civilization, it will be that one more turn type of a thing, and it's gonna
Yep.
be 1 a.m. by the time I finish, or just force myself to disengage from the experience. So there's that as well, where the games have become so engaging that if you have any responsibilities in your life, you're almost afraid to even start.
Yeah, 100%. And you want to throw yourself some softballs instead of getting into the hard stuff. And not only that, to your point about getting engaged, like there's the problem with being sort of up until 1 a.m., but there's also the side that like if you're halfway through a good story in a game, or maybe you're halfway through a good campaign or something like that, you may pause it or and come back to it later, but there's still this sort of like open thread in your mind where you're like, oh, but I really need to go back and close that. You got to get to the next chapter. I got to finish that campaign. I got to do whatever. And yeah, that element also, there is a sort of mental, an ongoing mental toll there of like an open browser in your brain, sort of.
That's why I feel these type of games, like especially with shooters, the extraction shooters or battle royales, like these are sort of a games where you can have a clear start and end to a session. Where it's easier to disengage and easier to take them in pieces rather than something that is just continues. And whether it's an RPG or playing Uncharted or any of these type of titles that you kind of like need to finish, but it's like finishing a TV show. So it's a different type of an experience. All right, let's close this down by talking about some high level predictions. Like, what do you see happening in the market for the next year or two? Like, what are the sort of opportunities, the macro trends, the markets? Like, what would you be looking at?
Sure. Well, in terms of growth, we still can consider that that's going to come from the console side of the market. Again, this is outlined in the report. We expect that, or let's say historically, as you get to the more mature phase of the console market, you'll hit peak install base, and you will reach the sort of maximum component of next gen content in the library for the console generation. And that typically coincides with a higher degree of spending for that time frame. So that's sort of the prediction for the next 3 years, that console will be one of the main drivers of growth for that reason. On top of that, you also have at some point a new Nintendo device coming out. Now again, Nintendo's very strong on its first party software, but even still, it is a source of growth and can be an inflection point and a new opportunity for new types of games as well. So I think those are a couple. In terms of what's going to keep on happening, I mean, when we look at this year, I expect to see more of the BattleBit and Helldivers 2 type breakout successes because there is less of a release slate of AAA titles. So I think that will give some breathing room for these other titles that sort of cater to a specific niche, the opportunity to kind of grow and to take a piece of market share. And then having said that, I do expect that we will continue to see a right sizing of the market. Like, I don't think that goes away in a month or two. You know, I think this is something, just looking at other industries, we talked a little bit about this at GDC. This is something that will likely have a period of time before it completely washes through the system. So I do sort of expect that that will kind of continue to happen, which is unfortunate, but likely the reality that we're in.
Yeah, so right, yeah, I agree, and especially with the advancements in the AI that we're seeing. So the tech and tools and we'll just keep on improving, and companies will just focus more strongly on profitability, so they're more likely to start using these tools, start experimenting, and probably we're going to see also a lot of work going for co-development, consulting, all these kind of stuff that pushes the need for large headcounts, and whatever is not the core competence of the studio or the company is going to be pushed to vendors or third parties.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair assessment.
Yeah, interesting. So industry is reshaping, becoming much more durable for the lean times ahead.
I would agree with that. It's remolding itself around the new norm, as we mentioned at the beginning.
Yeah, damn. All right. Well, Ben, thank you so much for jumping on the podcast, discussing the market trends. Always a pleasure
Thank you
to
very
have
much for
you.
having me.
And what's the best way to get in contact with you if somebody wants you and your team to come over and read the presentation that the research teams have done? No, I'm just kidding. To provide your services.
Absolutely. You can find me on LinkedIn, just Ben Porter. I'm the only Ben Porter working at Nuzu. And you can also send me an email, ben.porter@nuzu.com. That's a good way to get a hold of me. If you're already a client, you can reach out to your client success manager or account manager. Hopefully, you know who that is. And they'll be happy to arrange something where myself or maybe even Tom in the flesh can come and read the report out and have this kind of conversation with you and your team.
Yeah, we had actually Nuzu come in on our investor summit in Istanbul about a month or so ago. So it was really, really interesting. And especially with our audience, a lot of people are very, or a lot of founders and executives are very much focused on mobile. But I've never seen so many questions being asked from a person from your team.
Nice.
He was swarmed. So highly recommend getting Nuzu on site to discuss the gaming market overall. So you guys have a very interesting set of data, and you're very opinionated normally, so that makes into a good conversation.
Nice. Thank you very much for the kind words.
All right, thank you everybody for listening. Connect with Nuzu, get the latest report, link in the description. So on that, catch you guys later.
Bye for now.